Welcome to the Startup Canada podcast, where we talk to Canada's most innovative and entrepreneurial leaders and changemakers. I'm your host, Rick Spence, and as a business journalist, editor, and entrepreneur, I've learned what makes Canadian startups special, successful, and scalable. Join me every Tuesday to hear news stories of Canadian entrepreneurs and learn about the moments that mattered most on their journeys. The Startup Canada podcast is a production of Startup Canada. Don't forget to subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcasts. This podcast is presented by BDC. As the bank for Canadian entrepreneurs, BDC helps business owners thrive with flexible financing solutions and expert advisory services. To learn more, please visit bdc.ca. Entrepreneurs from coast to coast to coast, welcome to the Startup Canada podcast. On the show today, we're excited to speak with Jessica Miao. Jessica is the CEO and co-founder of Apricotton, the only bra brand that designs bras that grow as girls grow so that young women can fit into the same bra when they develop from an A to a D cup, and helping the 90% of girls who are embarrassed to wear their first bra. She's personally leading Apricotton's Gen Z community, growing it to 170,000 followers and 30 million organic views on TikTok and Instagram. By becoming young women's online big sister, Apricotton has been featured in Global News, CTV Television News, BuzzFeed, and 17 Magazine. Jessica, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Rick.
Delighted to have you. The way we normally start this show is by asking you for the best piece of advice that you hope entrepreneurs will take away from our conversation today.
Yeah, I love that. I would say mine is something that someone's told me when we first started Apricotton, which was that you can always launch and then launch again. So for example, if you're launching a product or a website, don't put too much pressure on how well the first big announcement goes, because it's better to put something out there in the market, test it with your customers and iterate it, than trying to get it perfect right away. And this thinking has really helped me de-stress whenever we're about to launch something.
That's interesting. Second time today that I've heard an entrepreneur talk about trying to overcome the ideal of perfection, not letting that get in the way of accomplishing things.
Yeah, it's definitely really important. It just takes a lot of the pressure off too.
Yeah. Excellent. So tell me about the origin of Apricotton. It's not sort of every day that we talk to people who've started their own designer fashion brand and in such an area where, you know, I wouldn't have thought there was that much room for innovation and new players. So tell me about how you got started.
Yeah, totally. So they're actually... you're right, maybe in the traditional bra space, it is, you know, bras have just been the same as how they were 20 years ago. But teen bras have been very much a forgotten niche within bras in general, too. So that's where we're focused on. And there actually is a huge amount of growth opportunity there. And we first discovered it when I took my 12-year-old sister bra shopping, where she was trying on cupped bras at sexy lingerie stores or training bras at department stores. And she actually had a mental breakdown in the change room because none of these bras fit her. Just picture a 10-year-old in a highly sexualized lingerie store. It's already just so uncomfortable. And she's not the only girl going through this. 90% of girls actually feel embarrassed to wear a bra, which is detrimental to their self-confidence, which can really impact their ability to focus on school and socialize with peers. And so I actually started Apricotton just seeing what she was going through. And my co-founder and I were talking about our very similar bra shopping experiences 10 years before. And nothing's changed for these girls. And we wanted to start by making a difference and help their feel confident during puberty.
Fabulous. What a great mission. Tell me a little bit about Chloe Baudouin, your co-founder. How did you guys meet? How do you guys come to agree on sharing this mission? And how do you divide up the work?
Yeah, I feel like I got really lucky with finding a co-founder. I feel like that is, when you're first starting a business, one of the hardest parts. But we actually met in business school. And then after graduation, we both decided to take the leap and start Apricotton in the middle of COVID. So there was quite a bit of a gap between grad and when we started our full-time jobs. And we were both very open about talking about our puberty challenges, talking about bra shopping, which can be a very taboo topic. So it was really important for me to have found someone who's aligned on helping girls feel confident, not just, you know, for the sake of marketing our business, but something that we both try to do in our daily lives.
And did I hear you say that you had full-time jobs as well?
Yeah. So for the first 2 years while we were running Apricot Inn, we also had full-time jobs and we were working on Apricot Inn in the evenings and on weekends.
Wow. Was there a great day when you each said, we can quit our jobs now?
Yeah, I think personally for me, it came down to at a certain point, I was just very burnt out. And I previously actually worked in management consulting, which was not a 9-to-5 either. So it just got to the point where I had to choose between whether or not I wanted to advance my consulting career or be an entrepreneur full time. And just given that we were making such a big impact with Apricot and we had hundreds of girls message us, you know, weekly about how their bra has really made them feel more confident in school, I decided to jump ship and be an entrepreneur full time.
And how did your family feel about that?
Luckily, they were pretty supportive. Yeah, I do also live on my own, so I feel like it wasn't really much that they could have said or done.
But sorry for asking sort of what might be a personal question, but it always interests me that how normal people respond when entrepreneurs say, yeah, I'm going to go on this full time. You've been to business school. You've got the consulting job. Life is good. And not everyone is going to understand why you want to do this other thing.
Yeah, totally. I think for me, even just based on the product that we're selling, it's a very personal, you know, item of clothing. And for me, I decided it was worth it because I wanted to be who I needed when I was younger. I went through a really hard time during puberty where I didn't have an older sister and I didn't necessarily feel comfortable talking to the adults in my life about the changes that were going on in my body. And so we're building Apricot Inn because we believe in a future where girls don't have to feel self-conscious during puberty and they know that all the things that they're going through is normal. And so I think being able to explain that to the people in my life, they were a lot more supportive just because of how mission oriented the business is.
Right. So tell me a bit about how do you do it? What is it about your products? How have you engineered them that you overcome some of that shame, some of the complexity that goes into bra shopping for teens?
Yeah. So I actually design all of our bras myself. And when we were designing our first collection, we surveyed hundreds of girls asking them what they wanted in a bra and then combined all the features into one Apricot bra. So for example, our bras are only sized based on a single underbust measurement. So you can find your bra size within seconds, whereas the traditional cup size letter number combo is actually pretty complicated. They're also 4 times stretchier than a lot of elastic band bras on the market. They have removable padding, so girls can choose their amount of coverage. They're invisible undershirts, and they're also moisture-wicking, so you can wear the bra from gym class to math class. And so we made them super functional, but also stylish, so that girls actually want to wear a bra versus, you know, the traditional flimsy white training bra that you're handed to by your mom.
Wow. Now, I come at this industry as somewhat of an outsider, but why do you think the industry has been so slow to change? Why have you been able to come in here with such a very different model and make a difference?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think teen girls have in general just become a forgotten niche, and only recently are we seeing, you know, the power of teen girls just like through how they've been able to popularize a lot of pop culture, you know, like the Barbie movie, for example. You know, they've just been kind of a forgotten demographic. And the other thing too is a lot of traditional bra brands struggle to come off authentic two teens because, you know, they're mainly run by a lot older men trying to market bras to 12-year-olds versus being Gen Z ourselves. We've been able to build a loyal community as a lot of girls actually want puberty advice from someone who's just gone through it. And so for me, when I was building out how we're going to grow Apricon, we decided to go the organic route. So that buying a bra actually feels like you're buying from a person that you connect with rather than a company.
Now, on the website, I saw at one point a video of either you or Chloe, you know, wrapping up an order, and there were multiple products in it. So the fact that you can have a bra that goes with you, that doesn't mean you only buy just one.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of our customers actually come back within just a couple of months to either order the same bra, but they'll order six of them so that they can wear a different bra every day, or they'll order our everyday bra and then they'll get a sports bra because girls wear different bras for, you know, the different activities that they have in their life.
How are you price-wise? How do you stack up against the competition?
Yeah, our bras are priced fairly based on how they're super high quality. So all of our bras in Canada retail for around $36.95. And then we do also have a bundling discount to increase our basket size.
Right. And how does that compare with the competition?
So a lot of traditional bra brands range like a cupped bra from a large competitors around like $60 to $80. And then other teen bra brands are around that $40 mark as well. But for us, you know, you're getting a bra that lasts you multiple years as you grow because every bra actually fits you from when you're flat chested all the way to a D cup. They're also made out of very high quality moisture wicking fabric. And also you can wear them. They're just more sustainable. It's also, you don't have to keep throwing out your bras anytime your weight changes.
And tell me how this apricot and magic of yours works. How do you make a bra that grows with someone during their most formative growing years?
Yeah. So they're four times stretchier than, typical bras that don't have an underwire. So naturally, as you grow, it'll stretch with you. The fact that they also don't have molded cups allows our bras to form to girls' natural shapes.
Very cool. What kind of feedback are you getting from your intended market? What are they saying about the problems that you're trying to solve?
Yeah, it's honestly, getting the feedback is probably one of the best parts of the job, just because we've gotten emails from moms saying things like, my daughter was bullied at school for, you know, growing breasts early. And then that day she saw an apricot in package on her porch and she tried it on and she actually cried because it made her feel a lot more normal. And now she like wears it every day. Like, we get emails like that all the time. 99% of our product reviews are also 5 out of 5 stars, with girls saying things like, I finally feel confident in my body.
Fabulous. I guess this is why you got into the business, right? To get feedback like that and see that you're saving people from some of the experience that you had to go through.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. How do you and Chloe divide up the chores now?
So it's actually been just the two of us working full time since Apricot, and so quite a small team. I mainly lead our product design, so designing the bras themselves, coordinating with their manufacturer, all of that, as well as growth marketing. So I'm actually the face of the brand on TikTok and on a lot of our social media pages. So those are my two primary focus areas. And then Chloe on the sales revenue generating side focuses on customer retention versus I'm focusing on, you know, new customer acquisition through TikTok, for example. So she leads a lot of our email marketing, SMS campaigns, as well as runs like operations, you know, things like working with our full-time web developer, and then finance.
Right. So how big is the team now?
It's just the two of us. And then we recently brought on a full-time web developer. And then we also have part-time influencer marketing managers and a content creator who makes TikToks for the Apricot Girls TikTok page.
Cool. Tell me a little bit about your strategy online with the digital platforms, and I guess particularly TikTok, since that's the one everyone's TikToking about.
Yeah, definitely. So for us, we've really, like I mentioned before, been able to differentiate by building a loyal Gen Z community because we are also part of that community. And so I, instead of starting an Apricot and TikTok, I actually used my personal TikTok to promote our bras and also give big sister advice, because a lot of Gen Z can tell very quickly when content is inauthentic. Like, for example, if a big brand tries to replicate a viral trend, it just comes off as cringy and unrelatable, versus our content comes off as authentic, because I've been able to slowly embed our products into advice videos, for example. So it's not like I'm just pushing the product and telling people to buy like a typical ad that you would get, for example. And so that's how we've been able to grow to 170,000 followers on TikTok. And we've also been able to replicate this virality. So, you know, we're not just another brand getting lucky with the algorithm by one video going viral. One in every 8 of my TikToks actually go viral.
Wow.
And so that just allows more eyeballs to be seen on our bras. And then we have a landing page specifically for TikTok to also help with conversions.
Very cool. Can you tell me a little bit more? I was intrigued by your statement that when the bigger brands try and be cool on TikTok, they tend to be cringy and unrelatable. I don't doubt it, but I'm just wondering if you can explain what that means, what that looks like when they do it as opposed to when you do it.
Yeah, totally. I think it's more like one of the big things on TikTok, obviously, is using like trending sounds and trending audios. So for example, like girl math was one of the trending terms like of last year. And a lot of brands just weren't using it correctly in the way that the trend was used. Like they changed kind of the definition of girl math to fit trying to sell their products. And it just comes off as, you know, they really missed the mark. Versus for me, I'm not super pressured for, you know, every video to make a sale. Like a lot of it is just to promote the community engagement, get girls commenting on my videos and following me so that when I actually post a bra-focused TikTok, more girls see it. And so because of that, I'm able to have a lot more fun with the videos. They don't get reviewed, for example, by, you know, a social media manager, and then the social media manager's manager, and then get posted like a week after the trend has already died down. So it's also small things like that too.
Then thank you for that, because I think it's really important that entrepreneurs realize the advantages they have of being small. They know all the disadvantages, but there are advantages to it, like not having infinite approvals and being able to move fast and looking and sounding more authentic. So that's terrific. You also mentioned sort of handing out big sister advice. Tell me a little bit about this part of your brand.
Yeah, so at our core at Apricot Inn, we don't want to just be a bra brand. We're really trying to build the go-to puberty community. So as soon as a girl hits puberty, she immediately comes to us for all of her puberty needs, including her bra, but also how to even get through this very sensitive life stage. And so I'm sharing advice on TikTok, like, you know, not just about breast development or what bra you should get, but how to insert a tampon and all of the nuanced issues that girls face when growing up that don't actually get covered by health class or, you know, talked about with their parents. Like a lot of the information online on, you know, Google blogs or in health class is very basic. Like, for example, they'll teach you what a period is, but they won't actually show you or demonstrate the angle that a tampon is supposed to be inserted, for example, or like how to make sure that after gym class, you don't smell bad. You know, a lot of, you know, your mom might just say like, hand you deodorant and be like, okay, good luck. So I'm focused on more so sharing the nuanced struggles of puberty that a lot of girls go through, and then they can ask me questions. And a lot of times I'll also reply to their TikTok comments with a video, which they get very excited about.
That's really interesting. Has anyone ever claimed this space before?
Yeah, there are definitely a lot of influencers who also share sisterly advice too. But we want to become that single trusted source of puberty advice from girls who have actually just gone through it. And, you know, showing that it's more normal and, you know, also even just like having fun and making TikToks, making fun of these struggles, so that girls know that it's really not that serious when you're in one of these stressful situations, because so many other girls are facing the exact same problem.
Right. I'm wondering if you can just share a little bit of your thoughts about the business that you're building right now. Do you sell everything online? Do you have any plans to sell through other channels, stuff like that?
Yeah. So right now we are selling just 100% e-commerce. We have been in a few boutiques, like for example, prom dress shops that we've tested. Retail is something that we are looking into, but right now, because most of our marketing is online, we're still trying to build out our online channel.
Right, right. When do you think you might explore more about getting into the stores?
Hopefully later this year.
Yeah. Very cool. Can you share with us anything about, I don't know, sales? I'm not asking you to disclose numbers or something, but, you know, is it getting to be, you know, a sizable marketplace for you?
Yeah, totally. 90% of our revenue actually comes organically, especially, you know, in the early stages of a startup. You know, we were fresh uni grads. We didn't have that much funding other than our personal savings. We've become very strategic in terms of where we want to spend our marketing dollars. And a lot of D2C brands, you know, put a lot of money into ads because they struggle to capture an audience quickly on platforms like Instagram or TikTok. But for us, we actually find TikTok is our highest converter. So every time I post a TikTok, we see our website views spike by 5x, and we're getting a lot of sales from that too. Which has been really great because it is a model that we've been able to replicate.
That's very cool. Can you share anything in terms of like revenue growth? Are you growing every year? Are you growing double digits? Things falling apart? Share with me whatever you like.
Yeah, luckily nothing has fallen apart yet. We do actually have quite a bit of runway for at least the next year and a half. And yeah, we are growing month over month. Steadily. And right now we're focusing on also growing our TikTok following. My personal goal by the end of this year is to grow to 500,000 followers, if not 1 million, by posting 6 times a day across all of our social media.
Very cool. And I'd really like to know a little bit more about your product sourcing. I understand that you've got some very congenial supplier in China. And I'm wondering how you found them and how you determined you'd be able to work together, because that's, you know, a big part of what you're doing. And, you know, it's a hard relationship to get right.
Yeah, absolutely. I really think that with finding the right person, we actually got lucky. We went with the first or maybe second manufacturer that we found and ordered samples from. A huge advantage that we had was I actually am fluent in Mandarin. So I'm able to call our production manager in China, and she's also quite young and really understands the space. And when we were sourcing multiple suppliers, it really was just the vibe that I got over the phone, you know, whether or not they understood that we even wanted to make bras for teens, like not for older women, which means that our sizing chart was going to be completely done by scratch, for example. and just how quickly they were able to understand our business, understand the, you know, little details that we had on our tech pack. And even now I'm just able to pick up the phone and call her when we have issues or we want to launch a new product, whereas a lot of D2C businesses actually have to go through a middleman, or, you know, you're, because of the time difference, you're sending one message and waiting a whole 12 hours or 24 hours for to get a reply.
Yeah. Very cool. Any advice for other entrepreneurs who might be trying to build a business that requires sourcing from China?
Yeah, I would say communication-wise, obviously, everyone knows it's super important. But when you're asking questions, make sure that you put it into bullet points, like, you know, question one or whatever, and you're messaging them that. Versus when we were first starting out, it was just a lot more casual. Like, our messages were just multiple bubbles and things can get missed. Obviously, I was able to call her, so there wasn't as much of a communication or translation error. But the easiest thing that you can do is actually send all of your questions and they can reply in line so that your communication is just very organized.
Right. And has there ever been a problem or a misunderstanding you can share with us that you guys were able to, you know, work out, just so people understand, you know, what it's like doing business on a basis like this?
Yeah, I guess one of the bras that we didn't end up making was a scalloped bra. So essentially, if you can picture like a triangle cup, but it had rounded corners all around it. And our manufacturer was trying to explain that they weren't able to make it because of the machinery that was used. So I actually sent her a bra that I had bought from somewhere and I shipped it to China. So that she could look at it, and we were making sure that we were looking at the exact same design versus trying to, you know, sketch it out right. And yeah, trying to do like charades over video call. So that took a long time to figure out and really understand why that bra couldn't have been made. So yeah, it's difficult, I think, in a virtual environment where you live so far from your manufacturer. So sometimes even just shipping items over speeds up the process a lot.
Right, right. So just really good communications, I guess, is very important.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, yeah. And in terms of what's selling, is it really just one product right now in different colors, or are there different models?
Yeah, so currently we have 8 bras to date. A few of them are everyday bras, but in different styles. So it really comes down to what color you like white versus a neutral shade or versus light blue. And we also have sports bras too. So those are obviously for if you're an athlete or for gym class. And we find that demographic wise, a lot of the younger teens like our perfect bra because we've advertised it as the perfect girl's first bra and the alternative to that white flimsy training bra. So that one is still currently our bestseller. And then our second bestseller is our milk tea bra, which is in a milk tea colored shade because it's super versatile and hides under white tops.
Ah, okay. And tell us who your customers are. Are they all Canadians or are you reaching other markets?
Yeah, so currently we ship across Canada, the US, the EU, the UK, and Switzerland. And a huge part of our customer base actually comes from the UK and the US, where we're trying to focus on expanding just because they have a lot of a larger audience, and our price point in those countries based on currency conversion is a lot more affordable too, versus in Canada, actually.
Right. They have Primark in the UK. I'm told that's where all the teens shop.
Yes, they do. But Primark's teen bras are quite flimsy and a bit see-through.
It's just amazing to me that a market like this, which is important, normally marketers try to get to their lifetime customers as early as possible. It just strikes me as so absurd that they've been neglecting, that the industry has been neglecting this market and not designing things for them as opposed to just trying to sell stuff to them.
Yeah, totally. There's definitely been a lack of options. Like right now, or before Apricot, and girls were choosing between a training bra, which, you know, didn't cover anything, or a traditional cupped bra. And the only other option was sports bras, which are made to compress your body to keep your breasts in shape while you're workout. So they're still also just not the most comfortable article of clothing when you're growing up.
Yeah, crazy. But this is what makes opportunities for entrepreneurs. This is why entrepreneurs exist, because big businesses lose the point somewhere along the way. In terms of your ideal customer, I guess there are girls from 10 to what, 16, or does it go farther than that?
Yeah, so we're targeting girls, you know, throughout the whole puberty stage, which can be as early as 9, even 8 to 17 years old. But our bras actually fit up to a 36D cup in traditional women's sizing. So technically, if you're within that size, and our bras are come in a very classic style. So anyone can technically wear the bras. Like personally, obviously, Chloe and I wear the bras ourselves. A lot of older women have worn the bras. A lot of moms actually who've bought for their teens have really loved the quality and then got a matching bra for themselves too.
Isn't that interesting? Does that point the way forward? I mean, it seems a shame to lose your entire demographic when they, you know, turn 17.
Yeah, I think the beauty about being in this business is that we're constantly getting new customers in, because, you know, every girl in the world is going through puberty. So it's great that, you know, our customer base is essentially half of the world's population. So for us, we want to continue expanding our business horizontally across different products rather than vertically across demographics, because we do want to become that go-to teen apparel brand that is cool. And so in order to do that, we don't want to also market to older women.
Okay. So what kind of ancillary products have you thought about providing to the teen market?
So we're planning on going into matching underwear just as a basket builder, so girls can match with their bra. And then we want to launch into adjustable clothing to really make clothing that changes as your weight changes the norm. So girls never have to feel self-conscious when they go from an arbitrary size small to a size large.
And what makes it adjustable? Is it about the stretchiness again?
Yeah, I'll be kind of taking the inspo from our bra features and then applying it into bottoms that we plan to start with, because that's typically where girls have the most issues being able to keep as they grow.
So sorry, Mom, you're not going to get your own Apricot and bra. I mean, you can buy your daughter's, but you don't get your own line. Is that right? That the you're not going to sell to the moms deliberately and strategically?
Deliberately, yes. But we find that a lot of our customers, because they love the high quality of the bras, they'll just buy one for themselves anyway.
Yeah. Why not have your cake and eat it too? But I love the focus. I love, you know who your market is, and you're learning more about them every day. So why not double down on them?
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. And you mentioned you have a runway. So I'm wondering how you've funded Apricot, and have you needed capital from beyond the two of you?
Yeah. So our first 2 years, we actually bootstrapped it. You know, luckily we did have full-time jobs. So our full-time jobs were essentially funding Apricot. And then last year we raised a pre-seed round. So we've been very fortunate to have met a lot of investors who have aligned with their vision.
And can you tell us who invested, or maybe just like the type of people who invested? Are these angels? Are these VCs?
Yeah, it's been a mix of VCs and angels. So last year in the spring, we took Apricot through Techstars Chicago. So that was one of our big investors.
Tell us a little bit about the Techstars program for those who might not know about it.
Yeah, so Techstars is the world's largest pre-seed investor. They have different programs across the world. A lot of them are mainly in the US, Every program we ended up finding based on the city is actually a little bit different based on the managing director of that program. But we really liked the managing director of Chicago. And so he's helped us a lot as a mentor.
And did that involve going to Chicago and working there and working with the people there for a certain amount of time?
Yeah, I think before COVID, it was fully in person. And then after COVID, it was hybrid. So the first week we flew to Chicago, and then there were two more times that we worked with everybody there. We know our cohort, though, in Chicago, they were meeting up like every day to work together. But in terms of programming, it was half-half.
Right, right. And so you met people there, people who believe in you and have funded you. What else did you learn from a program like that?
Yeah, so Techstars helped us really understand our customers and just the importance of going out there and talking to your customers. And so for us, we really focused on that over this past year to inform us about where we wanted Apricotton to be headed in terms of the products that we wanted to make. One of the great things about having a social media brand is that we are able to get feedback super quickly. So we would just put out Instagram polls, and within 24 hours, we had hundreds of responses of whether or not a girl wanted a red versus a green bra. And just based on that poll alone, that's what we decided to do.
Fabulous. Going forward, do you see yourselves going to do a seed round, going for more capital to fund your plans?
Yeah, we really want to take Apricotton global. So it is something that we're considering in the next 15 to 18 months.
Wow. What school, you mentioned you met at business school, you met Chloe at business school. What school did you go to? Let's give them a shout out.
Oh yeah, we went to Ivy Business School.
Okay, for some reason I had a feeling you were going to say that, and I didn't even look it up on LinkedIn.
It was just the vibe.
Yeah, there's a vibe that says, yeah, we're going to go global, and yeah, 18 months. Yeah. Sounds fabulous. You've obviously built a tremendous platform, and I wish you tremendous luck building it out and taking it global. Sort of final question. It's a lightweight one. Where did the name Apricotton come from? Because I love it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we actually get this question a lot. I remember when we first started Apricotton, we had in my notes app probably 20 ideas. And then Chloe and I got on a call and we decided on it because we wanted something that represented growth, like apricot, you know, a fruit, and also something that represented comfort. So cotton, and then we just thought it was the perfect pun.
It absolutely is. Well, very well done. And did you like engage a branding expert for thousands of dollars to get there?
No, not at all. I was the branding expert.
Very well done. Shout out to our friends at Western University and the Ivy Business School. We've been talking with Jessica Miao, the co-founder and CEO of Apricotton in Toronto. Jess, do you have any final words of advice or a call to action for the entrepreneurs who are trying to grow their brands and businesses and are loving what you do?
Yeah, I would say final piece of advice would be that starting a business is supposed to be fun. I think especially after you work on it for a few years, the burnout is definitely real. And I always check in with myself once a month and ask myself if I'm still genuinely having fun, because there are definitely a lot of lows. And if the answer is yes, then that's how I decide that I want to keep going. Just because the pure willpower of continuing your business as an entrepreneur, you know, that kind of runway is just as important as, you know, your financial runway, for example. And so I think you should always remember that it is supposed to be fun.
And that's fabulous advice and a wonderful way to go out. If you're not still having fun, then you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Jessica, thanks so much. Continued good luck to you and Chloe.
Thank you so much for having me.
It was our pleasure. Thank you so much for tuning into another episode of the Startup Canada podcast. This show is produced by Lauren Hicks and Maddie Stiles. Be sure to tune in every Tuesday for a new episode. Until next week, I'm your host, Rick Spence.